I am Lisa Detmer, and today we will remember Marty Keel, a remarkable friend of mine and a lesbian feminist animal rights activist. Marty lost her battle with leukemia this past November, leaving a hole in the animal rights and ecofeminism movements that will be felt forever. She was a pioneer, a visionary, an ambassador for animals and women. She was also an incredibly warm, kind, and thoughtful person. Her philosophy about caring for animals and people was part of who she was. She had an enormous, genuine concern for everyone's health and well-being, and lived her life with great integrity, giving to all, even at the end of her life. The day before she died, she spoke by video to a conference of doctors, telling them of the dangers of Western medicine and the need to listen and care for their patients. Although she ate only health foods and avoided toxic medicines and environments, she was struck by a cancer that killed her in 6 months, probably caused by environmental factors. Marty was both activist and scholar, and each of those passions informed the other. She went back to school after already earning 2 masters to get a doctorate in religious studies from the Graduate Theological Union. She was the author of the groundbreaking book, Nature, Ethics, and Ecofeminist Perspective. She was a visiting scholar at the Department of Environmental Science, Policy, and Management at Cal Berkeley. A vegan for over 20 years, she co-founded the Feminists for Animal Rights in 1982, hoping to bridge the divisions between the feminist and animal advocacy movements. Her 1985 article, The Liberation of Nature, A Circular Affair, offered the first feminist critique of environmental ethics. Her 1989 article, From Healing Herbs to Deadly Drugs, Western Medicine's War Against the Natural World, provided the major inspiration for a historic lawsuit against the Canadian government. Marty provided expert witness testimony in the suit, which charged the government with religious-based discrimination against holistic forms of healing. Over the years, Marty's primary goal was to develop an ecofeminist holistic philosophy that could bridge the philosophies of feminism, animal advocacy, and environmental ethics. Marty believed that ecofeminism offers the possibility of a genuinely holistic way of perceiving the world. By shedding light on the root causes of social problems, ecofeminism can help us to deepen our capacity for empathy for all living beings, thereby helping to bring about a world of peace and respect for all living beings. In her book, Nature Ethics, An Ecofeminist Perspective, Marty explains her reason for focusing on ecofeminism. She wrote, "This project was inspired by my frustration with the inadequate consideration of animals within the larger field of nature ethics. My interest arose out of the pain and empathy I experienced upon learning of the harrowing treatment of other-than-human animals throughout modern society." Marty found herself dissatisfied with some of the philosophies within animal rights theories, nature philosophies, and eco-philosophy. Quote, "I was beginning to suspect that the neglect of other-than-humans was not an incidental aspect of the Western nature philosophies, but rather central to it," she wrote. "Instead of continuing to seek an ethic of philosophy that expressed a concern for individual beings, I therefore began to investigate why this concern was lacking." The thing about Marty is that she didn't just dwell on these problems or complain about them. Her writings and contributions to the thought process that underlined the ecofeminist movement are invaluable, but her work went well beyond theory. Marty was also a tireless activist and just a good person who incorporated her beliefs into her life to always be kind and caring to all. When I last talked to Marty about 8 months ago, she was generously helping me with my health issues. Today, we will replay an interview that I did with her in 2005, where she talks about the connection between animal rights activism, vegetarianism, and feminism. So can you tell us a little bit about how you see feminism relating to the issue of animal rights?
Well, I think it comes down to a patriarchal mindset. And this patriarchal mindset conceives of women and non-human animals in very similar ways. You have this idea in our culture, in Western culture in general, that women and non-human animals are what Simone de Beauvoir called the other. They're both conceived as basically objects that exist to serve the needs of men, or in the case of animals, animals exist to serve humans, but in particular men. and they have no independent identity beyond their use in this way. I think we have this dualism in our culture, this mind-body dualism, and traditionally men are associated with the mind. They are associated with the divine, with God, with logos in the what's called logos in the Greek religion, the soul, that which is eternal, that which transcends nature. And on the other hand, you have the material world, and women are associated with the material world. Non-human animals are associated with material world, and the material world lives and dies. It's also associated with instinct and evil and reproduction. It's not eternal. It's not divine. You have this stark dualism, and the whole idea, I think, in Western culture is that the material world is something that you want to transcend. You want that eternal life. You want something that's going to live on. And you can speculate about where this comes from. You know, some women have said that it may come from the fact that men don't give birth and they have to develop other ways of connecting across the generations or other ways. You know, there's some kind of a fear of death. And if somehow they can see themselves as associated with that which is eternal, they won't have that fear. But it comes down to this idea of the fear of our animal existence, that we are not just animals. We are something more than animals. And, you know, of course, that's been a rallying cry for most progressive movements. You know, this idea, we're not just animals. But, of course, what's wrong with being an animal? Isn't that the real problem, is that we have this attitude that there's something wrong with being animals? Both are also exploited for their reproductive capacity, and both are seen as objects to be consumed. Women in pornographic magazines and animals as flesh. You see that in what's called animal husbandry, you know, very tellingly, and basically factory farming, which is what we now have as animal husbandry, is about the complete control of the bodies of non-human animals. They are there just to reproduce and serve men's needs. And you have a similar phenomena with women's bodies. You know, if you look at the sex industry, I think you see a clear analogy. You know, the idea that women's bodies are there to serve men. Prostitution, the sex trade industry, you know, all of these things, I think, are just ways in which men perceive women's function as just there to serve their sexual needs. And the same way as, you know, you have on factory farms, their bodies are there just to, you know, to grow and be rendered into flesh. You know, there's no other purpose for an animal living on a factory farm. Factory farming is really supporting a rape culture. The animals are actually routinely, the female animals are routinely raped on factory farms. That's actually an industry term to refer to rape racks. And the animals are immobilized, the female animal is immobilized on a rape rack, and either a male animal is allowed access to her, or an industry worker actually rapes her with his fists. So by supporting these kinds of treatments of animals, we're supporting a rape culture. And I think as feminists, we need to become more aware of these kinds of treatments and see that, this is just another expression of this whole masculine dominance of the natural world. And if you look at the kinds of actions, the kind of conduct that we have in our society, you see these rituals of dominance that are directed against the non-human world. The most obvious one is hunting. And if you look across all the cultures, you see this idea of of killing an animal is a rite of initiation into manhood. You are entering into a whole sphere of manhood that is somehow opposed to the female world. You are superior to that. You look at pornographic magazines, I think you certainly see these images of women as these wild beasts and this whole idea of women's bodies as trophies. And a lot of people don't realize that that whole phenomenon of hunting has been central to the environmental movement, which grew out of the conservation movement. And it was basically spearheaded by hunters. And they wanted to conserve animals in order to have enough left around to hunt and kill. That was the primary motivation of the early conservationists, such as Theodore Roosevelt. And it was really more about conserving manhood than conserving non-human animals. And there was a lot of discussion about the increasing femininity among men because of urbanization, and there was this concern that if men didn't have these opportunities to go out and have this pioneering experience, that they would become overly effeminate. When I talk about it serving primarily men's needs, I don't mean that women don't benefit from the exploitation of non-human animals. I think they do. But I think that primarily it is the industries of animal exploitation are primarily run by men. And I think it's something that's often overlooked. I think we see that in general with the environmental movement as well. We talk about it. We tend to talk about it in gender-neutral ways. Oh, we have this environmental problem. Oh, we have this problem of animal abuse. But we fail to look at who are the primary people who are engaged in these activities. And if you look at the people who are running our agribusinesses, if you look at the hunters, very clearly the majority of hunters are men. If you look at the people who are running the fur farms, if you look at the mass industries of animal abuse, they are run by men. And I'm not saying this to be what, you know, people come back and say, oh, you're a man-hater. How can you say these things? I'm saying them because I think we have to recognize the reality. That's the first step in transformation, is to name the reality. And then we can stand back and look at what we can do to change that. And we also need to look at the ways in which women participate in that, because as consumers, we do. And so we can, and as consumers, we can have a big influence in social change.
So it seems like a vegetarian would be a feminized person as compared to a meat eater is a very masculine person in this culture. Maybe you could talk a little bit more about that, how you see that.
Well, historically, that is, there has been a very strong association between masculine self-identity and meat eating. Meat eating, it's a way of forming relationships with some beings and separating yourself from others, namely non-human animals. Historically, it has been associated with class divisions. Those who are part of the aristocracy are typically given meat. And those who are not, part of the higher classes, are typically not given meat. So there are all these divisions about it, and it's always been this idea that men should have access to meat. During war, it's always men who are thought, well, they have to have their meat, otherwise they couldn't fight properly. So it's a strong association with masculine self-identity and the converse. So if you're a vegetarian, there's this idea that somehow you're effeminate. But there's this idea that somehow you're not aligning yourself with the proper male model.
So I guess the question comes up that people have this idea that there are traditional societies that were meat-eating but yet had a very compassionate relationship with animals. And also there are societies that don't eat meat based on certain religions, but are very patriarchal. So I'm wondering how you reconcile those two facts with the idea that the relationship between what you're saying is patriarchy and eating of animals.
Well, it's interesting that you bring up other cultures, because when people say that it's this middle class issue, they forget that most of the world is vegetarian. You know, if you look at, you know, Hinduism and a number of Buddhist sects, the Jains, certainly, and nobody, you know, is saying you know, well, you know, look at them, you know, that somehow that's oppressive for them to be talking about. Obviously, there are other issues involved because there's this concern about a cultural imperialism. When people talk about vegetarianism, they're saying there's this sensitivity to other cultures, which I think is good. We should be sensitive to how things could be interpreted in culturally imperialist ways. At the same time, I don't think it is inherently culturally imperialist to put out there an ideal. And for me, the ideal is a world in which no one has to live by killing other animals. That is the ideal. Historically, a lot of the reasons for being vegetarian had more to do with this idea that meat is something that you naturally lust after in the same way that you lust after women. And in order to be pure and holy, you're going to abstain from those things, things that bring out the animal in you. And just as in hunting, you see the domination of the animal in the external world, in this ascetic tradition, you dominate the animal within, and that is what makes you holy. But in my opinion, it's just the converse of the same phenomenon. It is a patriarchal mindset. And so I distinguish my form of vegetarianism, which I call a radical feminist vegetarianism, from the ascetic form in which, you know, you just abstain from these things that inflame the animal passions, and, you know, are basically very, you know, is basically a patriarchal worldview. And for me, it's not about abstention. It's about embracing my relationship to other living beings, about developing a deeper sense of compassion. And it's about a positive relationship to food and to other living beings. So it's not negative, it's positive. And I do think that there's this tendency to generalize about native cultures that, oh, they killed animals in respectful ways. And, you know, I think that there are cases where a number of native people did say prayers before they killed the animals. But there are also other cultures where they killed animals indiscriminately. So I think we have to be careful about generalizations. And to me, the whole notion of saying a prayer before you kill an animal and this notion that the animal gives their life, to me, I think is something on along the lines of wishful thinking. But I think it shows that there's some feeling of lack of ease about what is being done, that ideally it's not something that you want to do, that you have these uncomfortable feelings and this is how you come to terms with it. Because my focus is on this culture, what we are doing in the dominant culture. I think that's where our focus should be, and what's happening on factory farms and laboratories and fur farms and all those places. What I wanted to bring up was this whole notion of compulsory meat eating in our culture. And I use that word deliberately as a takeoff on Adrienne Rich's idea of compulsory heterosexuality, because she basically argued that heterosexuality is not just something that is natural, that every woman just naturally is biologically drawn to be with a man and vice versa, that it's this institutional complex that tells a woman that her life is incomplete without a man, that men must have access to women. And in a similar way, I think we have the same idea with compulsory meat eating, that animals and their flesh exist in a compulsory way for humans, and as I said before, particularly men, and that you couldn't possibly be healthy without eating meat. I think there's this idea, you know, that we're naturally drawn to meat, that it's part of nature. Of course, we're very selective about the things that we say are natural. We say it's natural to be predators, and so we identify with the predator. But we forget that the vast majority of non-human animals are vegetarians. It's clear that it's an institutional idea that is perpetuated by agribusiness, by the meat and dairy industries, and by our culture that thinks that could you be possibly healthy without this symbol of meat? And now we hear it as protein. Before it was about, you know, virility and strength, and it's certainly about those things now, but we hear about this protein scare. You know, if you don't eat animals, you won't have enough protein. You know, broccoli has a lot of protein. I mean, it's, you'd have to work very hard to get a protein deficit in our society. As long as you're eating enough food, you're getting enough protein, by and large. And I think that really this idea of not getting enough harkens back to earlier ideas of the association with meat and strength and so on.
So you mentioned that the feminist aspect of this critique is also a new concept of caring and empathy. If you could talk a little bit about that, how that is specifically feminist.
Yes, a number of feminists, both in feminist philosophy, both in the animal rights movement, and a number of areas are talking about moving beyond the concept of animal rights as a abstract notion of obligations and rights, that somehow this is this antagonistic worldview that you have this thing called rights and you're going to say who can have it and who can't. And they have to have X, Y, Z qualities. If you're Peter Singer, who wrote Animal Liberation, that you have to have sentience. So, humans are acting as these judges that are saying who can come into the community of rights-bearing beings. And feminists are starting to look at things in a different way, where a lot of us are talking about care and compassion and saying that this is what is the basis for our concern for other living beings, that it's not to do with this abstract ideology. It comes from our gut-level feelings of concern. I know personally I can say that that's the case for me.
Clearly, feminism is not just for women, although it seems that women are primarily the people who are most involved. I'm wondering, does it come out of some biology relationship of women to compassion because of their biology or some? How did that connection develop?
I think there's no one sense of mind on this. I think some people would say that women are naturally more caring, and maybe that has to do with women's biology, that they're the ones that typically are the ones that bear and raise children. Well, they're the only ones that bear children, but that raise children. And other people would say it has more to do with our own history of being dominated by men and that we have compassion because of that. And who knows, maybe it's a little of both. We do know that historically women have been the predominant ones in the animal rights movement right from the beginning. Historically, it really was this whole notion back in the 19th century that women were the ones that could promote this sense of compassion, that women were opposed to the violence that men were demonstrating, that they could make this a peaceable, nonviolent world. Of course, it wasn't called animal rights back then. It was the humane movement or animal welfare later on.
I guess some criticisms that people have is that they see the animal rights movement as caring more about animals than people, and they see it also as a luxury for people who have money. Some people might criticize the animal rights movement as being elitist and yes, primarily white, and not really having a linking of issues, but also not a recognition of how people in other classes and other socioeconomic strata and also in other cultures may deal with this issue.
I think that charge gets made a lot, and there's some truth in it, and there's some lack of truth. I think that, first of all, it's never a dualism that, the people in the animal rights movement, many of them have been active in other movements. I think we tend to think of compassion as this scarce commodity, that if you care about one cause, that you can't possibly care about another. And many of us are trying to unite the different causes. We're always bringing up other issues. So I don't think they're at all inherently opposed. And I think that as we deepen our sense of empathy, that we're actually going to be better able to work in other movements and better able to raise the issues. I think our movement could be a lot better about making alliances. I just attended a grassroots animal rights conference in New York. That is one of their core issues, is to make alliances with other movements. So there definitely are people in the movement who are looking to ways that we can do that. And one of the things I think we need to do is start in the schools. We need to start early and transform the whole construct of masculine self-identity as this thing that is established in opposition to women and all of the non-human world.
I am Lisa Detmer, and that was an interview that I did 6 years ago with ecofeminist and animal rights activist Marty Keel. Marty died last fall. Yesterday, I came together with her other friends and community members to celebrate her life and work. This song played at her memorial was written by her sister Kate using Marty's own words. It is called A Better World.
Driving down a busy street, I saw a kitten was in danger. Need to find a home for her. Coaxed the kitten to the car and led me to a group who told me of the horrors we inflict on animals. Factory farms, fur farms, laboratory animals, my heart grieves for the suffering. My empathy was awakened. I became a vegan. We have to call an amnesty.
It was clear against the natural world.
We reclaim our capacity to care. We have to call an amnesty in this war against the natural world. Practice peace and nonviolence. Make this a better world for all. Factory farms bring devastation to the earth, the soil depletion. Consumption, air and water pollution. Laboratory scientists use animals as objects. Think the greater good justifies it all, the suffering. Scientists make drugs for us, weapons of war. They say we'll conquer all disease. But why not heal people naturally and not with violence? We have to call an amnesty in this war against the natural world. Reclaim our capacity to care. We have to call an amnesty in this war against the natural world. Practice peace and nonviolence. Make this a better world for all.
This is Women's Magazine on KPFA 94.1 FM and online at kpfa.org.